The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning. It's just turning 5 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to this Tuesday's 9 till noon show. It is, of course, the 13th of June 2023, and as we heard, potentially the hottest day of the year. So far, not quite sure if that applies to the Northwest or the country as a whole, but anyway, be that as it may, hopefully you're happy and healthy enough to enjoy it. Now, we're going to keep you occupied, hopefully, for the next 3 hours on this programme. The quiz returns. If you heard it yesterday, it was an unmitigated disaster, but we have fine-tuned it, we've finessed it. And it's going to be amazing. I'll tell you how you can get involved in the competition a little later on with another €100 one for all voucher to give away. We've worked on the questions. We've worked on the format. We've even worked on the quiz show host. It's going to be brilliant. So stay tuned for that. That and so much more besides. 086 60 25,000, by the way, is the WhatsApp and text number for you to get involved in the show. It's your show. We want your views, your news as well. Pass on any information you think would be interesting to your fellow listener. Niamh and Caroline taking the calls as well on 07491 25,000. And if email's your thing, you can jot down and send it to comments@highlandradio.com. All right, let's look at what's coming, what's on the front and inside of some of today's newspapers. We'll start with the Donegal Democrat. Concerns have been expressed at the Garda workforce in Bundoran. The matter was raised on Friday at the Donegal Joint Policing Committee by Bundoran-based Sinn Féin councillor Michael McMahon. He told the meeting that one sergeant and three Gardaí were stationed in the town. Bundoran's a very busy seaside town and has an increased population, Councillor McMahon said. The town is under severe pressure because of the amount of people that are moving into Bundoran. I'm worried that three Gardaí and one sergeant won't be fit to do what's being asked of them. I'm asking for an increase for the summer season. The Derry Journal this morning, there it's the Inishowen edition we have. Road users across Inishowen and Donegal have been urged to keep the race in its place this weekend as the Donegal International Rally attracts thousands to the county. It's a huge operation. I mean, obviously there's almost a couple of things going on, isn't there? There is the rally itself and its organisation and the true fans, but we do know that lots of people who are maybe car enthusiasts that might not even watch any of the rally tend to visit the Northwest. And we just want to make sure that everyone has fun, doesn't disrupt too much for the locals, and gets home safe. So fingers crossed, that's what we have to look forward to this weekend. The Donegal Road Safety Working Group has issued a road safety appeal to everyone attending the event and cautioned them that road safety is everyone's responsibility. It added that the one essential ingredient required for everyone's safety is personal responsibility. The working group says true motorsport fans come and go to the rally events and no one would ever know they intended. Unfortunately, they go on. These events also attract a cohort who attend these events whose driving and behaviour have a lasting negative impact on the local community, it added. But I mean, listen, a lot of these cars that come up here are heavily modified. You couldn't get them through an NCT. You know, put checkpoints on the main roads in, and if if the cars don't comply, turn them away. I don't know, is that too harsh? I'm all for people having fun, by the way. I'm not too a big fan of heavy policing, and I think people should be able to have a bit of fun. But if cars are clearly dangerous, it's not too hard to figure out how to keep them out either, is it? Right, the Irish Times this morning. The coalition is set to resist calls from the opposition to halt data centre growth despite a 31% increase in electricity consumption by the centres. Now, I'll read on and the details might be contained within the article, but, you know, I remember going back, it was around about the time the whole situation in Ukraine started, and I remember saying that it's not going to be too long now before we hear the ads where they're going to tell you to wash your clothes at night or turn your heating down 1 or 2 degrees, and it was all about saving energy because there was pressure on the energy infrastructure, and lo and behold, along came these adverts, just as you might expect. So we, as a very complicit and compliant population, have used 9% electricity, less electricity in the last year compared to years previously. Now, some of that's going to be people were working at home, maybe there's more electricity consumption, but we changed our habits because you know, that's the royal we, so to speak. Many people did, many people didn't. But anyway, we were good boys and girls, and we reduced our electricity consumption by 9%. Now, of course, we might have saved a bit on our electricity bill, but we thought we were doing it for the greater cause, didn't we? Well, whilst we were doing that, thousands of more data centres, which, you know, they're not a prior, they are important to the type of economy we have, but thousands more came online, and they now use 31% of our entire electricity creation, whilst ours has dropped, our usage has dropped by 9%, and that's with a significantly increased population. So if it's about green and saving energy and stopping us burning turf and coal or gas or whatever it might be to generate electricity, we're doing our bit, but the data centres are chewing through it like nobody's business. Now, as I say, there might be a financial saving for us, though I never feel that we realise that in our electricity bills, but it's crazy, isn't it? Roughly 75 data centres are in operation in the Republic last year. They consumed 400% more electricity in the final quarter of 2022 compared with the same period in 2015. The Social Democrats and People Before Profit have called on the government to implement a moratorium on data centre expansion as well as new oversight of the sector. But cabinet ministers have rejected these calls and said what is needed instead is a greater shift towards making data centres more efficient. Now, they've already figured out their workarounds on this, by the way, because instead of using electricity, they've switched to using gas, which is also not good for the environment. Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Simon Coveney, indicated that the focus will not be on reducing the number of data centres, but empowering them differently. It's important to say that there is no technology-based economic growth without data centres. So we accept that, do we? But they can generate it a different way or contribute more, whatever it might be. We're using, just to recap, we're using 9% less electricity as a nation, as a whole, as the consumer, the residential consumer, but the data centres are taking 18% of all the power generated, and that's gone up by 31%. So there's something going on there, isn't it? Just store that information for when doors are being knocked and what have you. I think it's useful to have facts, and those are facts. Right, if you're lucky enough to have some savings, the Irish Independent reports that the country's leading bank is doubling the interest it pays to savers, putting pressure on its rivals to respond. AIB and its subsidiary EBS will pay 2% on a number of deposit accounts from this week, the Irish Independent has learned. This is up from 1%, with experts pointing out there is more than a decade since savings interest rates were at 2%. It's likely to force Bank of Ireland and Permanent TSB to respond. Irish banks have come in for huge criticism up to now for just passing on a fraction of the 7 European Central Bank rate increases to savers. Right, there is around 151 billion in household savings. Where is all your money? Why have you all got so much money and why won't you give it to me? 151 billion in household savings across the 3 retail banks and credit unions, which has been earning little or nothing for years now. AIB is increasing the savings rate to 2.2% on both AIB and EBS regular savings offers. Like, I don't begrudge anyone having money because they work hard to accumulate it, but who's got the 151 billion euro in household savings across a population of, what, 5 odd million? How do you do it? 086 60 25,000, please. We were talking yesterday about, and we're going to talk about it in more detail down the line as it relates to falling attendance for Catholic churches, but also the fact that the way trends are going, there's probably going to have to be an amalgamation of parishes and stuff because there's just not enough priests to cover the amount of parishes that there are. And I get the impression, really, that the congregations are going to have to just come to terms with that fact because the priests simply aren't there. That being said, and this is in the Irish Daily Mail, a Nigerian bishop has said Ireland must open the doors to African priests to strengthen the Catholic Church here amid declining members of clergy. However, Irish parish priests have said importing foreign priests is not the answer, and that lay people must be more involved in running their local churches to create a sustainable church for the future. Speaking at the recent All-Ireland Rosary Rally at Knock Shrine in County Mayo, Bishop Oliver Dome of Madguguri Diocese in Nigeria said, the new development is that Africa has to come to Europe to evangelize Europe. Now, a lot of priests would have went in the other direction historically, I'd imagine. It's our turn now to come. They, Irish missionaries, did it in the past, and now with the secularism and other secularistic practices, the church is diminishing in Europe, so we have to come. Happily enough, there are a number of priests from Africa, especially Nigeria, that are already in Ireland. I'd appeal to the Irish bishops to open the doors. They're coming to help to re-evangelize Europe. So that could be a solution. More Nigerian, more African priests coming back. Not coming back, but returning the favour, you could say, I suppose. Do you see that as a solution? 086 60 25,000. Just a one for you to... It's probably not going to be relevant, but I thought I'd mention it just in case it might be. This is in the Irish Daily Star. The HSE is warning people to ask for ID from anyone calling to their home claiming to be collecting a child with a disability for an out-of-home support provision. The warning comes after an unidentified male called to the house of a parent whose child avails of home support disability services in the Louth Meath area at the end of May. The male claimed he was from the HSE to collect the parent's child for an out-of-home support provision. In a warning letter issued to parents, the HSE said the man knew the child's full name and he was wearing a mask and a hat. The mum reported that she was immediately suspicious and asked the man to present his ID. He did not provide any identification and left. The letter continues to warn parents to ensure that you request identification from all staff calling to provide home support, community respite, summer camp provision for your child. So as I say, that was down the country, but still, you never know. They could be mobile and it's no harm to have that information in the back of your head. A horrific story you may have been following on the news and in the newspapers, and it's covered today in most papers. I'm taking this story from the Irish Sun. A man appeared in court yesterday accused of murdering Chloe Mitchell as her sister Nadine paid tribute to her special angel. Brandon John Rainey, 26, from Jane Street, Ballymena in County Antrim, appeared via video link at Ballymena Magistrates Court where he was charged with murdering Ms. Mitchell between June 2nd and 5th. Rainey wore a grey sweatshirt and when asked if he understood the charges, replied yeah. A PSNI detective inspector told the court she can connect the accused to the charge, which is standard PSNI language for court appearances. Rainey's defence barrister, Neil Moore, told the court that he was not applying for normal bail. He said his application was for Rainey to be remanded to the secure psychiatric unit at the Shannon Clinic as he is a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. He argued that Rainey should be detained there under the mental health order so that it can be psychiatrically assessed. He had escaped from, or absconded, I'm not sure what the right terminology is from a similar facility on three occasions previously. I'm not sure if it's described as escaped. The papers have used that language, but I'm not, as I say, not quite sure if that's the correct terminology. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror today, it's a story from the UK. A mother of three has been jailed for taking pills to abort her baby after the legal time limit. The 44-year-old got the tablets by lying to a pregnancy service during a remote consultation in lockdown. A court heard the mum had carried out online searches, including how to hide a pregnancy bump and how to lose a baby at 6 months. The woman, who had three sons before becoming pregnant in 2019, did not see a doctor about her pregnancy because she was embarrassed, the trial heard. Her baby died on May 11th, 2020, days after getting pills from the British Pregnancy Advisory Service. It believed she was 7 weeks pregnant. A scheme brought in during the pandemic allowed women to be posted the pills up to 10 weeks pregnant. But the mum, who the Mirror is not naming, terminated her baby girl at 32 to 34 weeks. Abortion is permitted up to 24 weeks, but after 10 weeks, it's carried out in the clinic, at Stoke Crown Court. Mr. Justice Pepperell said it was a tragic case, but she was jailed for that. And I just note on social media that there are those who think it's terrible that she should be jailed for that. But then there are others who believe that the sentence wasn't severe enough. Okay, that was a run through the papers. Good morning to Charlie, Cam, Rosemary, Paul, watching from around the world, it seems, on our social media. You're able to watch this show every day on your phone, laptop, big screen, whatever way you want to do it, on your Fire Stick. YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland is the way to go there. You can watch us on Facebook too as well, of course, Highland Radio Ireland or Highland Hub. Elaine Worski is Economic Development Officer with Donegal County Council and is with us on the programme now. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
No, it's good to have you on. Now, we're talking about Donegal County Council working in collaboration with digital hubs across the county and offering a chance to work for free from a digital hub in Donegal until September 30th. Before we get to that initiative, can you talk to us about this network of digital hubs, what they are and who avails of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So Donegal is actually one of the very few counties that has such a brilliant, connected and collaborative network of digital hubs. They're located all over the county, from Bundoran to Buncrana and everywhere in between. And remote workers who live locally or who come here on a working holiday can avail of these. And they're a brilliant resource for the community in Donegal.
Yeah, and do we know, is maybe it's seasonal, you know, who uses them? Is it people that live here now or people locally that avail of them? Is it people holidaying here or people that have moved here and it's kind of their office space?
It's quite a large mix of all of that, really. Like, from speaking to the Donegal Hubs Forum,
I just can't hear you quite clearly there, Elaine. I'm not sure if the speaker's away from your mouth.
Sorry, can you hear me
now? Yes, go ahead, Elaine.
Yeah. So it's actually a great mix of all of those things that you were speaking of. Like, there's people who live here, who have moved here to raise their families or to work or whatever reason it is, and they work in the hubs all year round. It's their permanent office space. There's also people who work in a hybrid situation, so they'll be in the hubs a few days a week and then go to their company headquarters or wherever it is. And there's also that mix of the seasonal, the working holiday people as well, people who come here to visit family, to visit friends, or just to explore Donegal and experience Donegal. And having the network of digital hubs and having an initiative like the Working Holiday Campaign gives them the opportunity to extend their stay and to continue exploring without compromising on their time or their work.
Now, I mean, obviously the broadband rollout continues, and, you know, in lots of even the more rural parts of Donegal, we are seeing high-speed broadband being installed. Does that replace what the function of a digital hub? Really, what I'm trying to get is that someone who is coming here, do they need more than just the good broadband, or are these digital hubs for people who might be staying in areas that don't have great broadband? Do you get where I'm coming from? Like, is it more than just the speed of the internet?
It's absolutely more than just the speed of the internet. The digital hubs offer a community to a lot of remote workers, people who otherwise may be working in quite isolated conditions, like in their back room, in their house, or wherever it is. So going to a hub, it kind of gives the feeling of going to work without actually having to go to wherever your primary headquarters is. And everyone there, and they're all remote workers for the most part. So there's a real camaraderie there, and it's a network of people, and it is like a community that they can have offered. Yeah.
And this is a different thing. I mean, and the real focus of the launch today is about the Working Holiday Campaign for 2023. It's to add, presumably, another string to our bow for people who are, you know, looking to get away but still need to be able to do some work. And that's really what this is about, isn't it? Come up here, stay here, enjoy all that we have, but you still have access to an office, effectively.
Exactly, yeah. So as I said, it's extending your stay without compromising on your time or your work. And it's actually running until October this year as well. There was such a demand for it last year, so we decided to extend it for a month. And we're also in collaboration with Healthy Ireland this year. So that is, they have an initiative called the Civic Dollars, which people can avail of. And it's it's a really great initiative, and it encourages people to improve their mental and physical well-being, to engage more in their communities, and to support local businesses as well.
Okay, brilliant. Where can people get more information?
Yeah, so all the information is available on the website. So it's donegal.ie/workhalldl. And if anyone is in the area, they can drop into the launch today as well in GTEC Carrigart.
Lovely stuff. All right, have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. That is Elaine Worski, Economic Development Officer with Donegal County Council. Right now, a new Oireachtas committee formed to consider the issue of assisted dying will hold its first public meeting today. The joint committee of 14 Ds and TDs and senators will meet at 11 a.m. It's due to hear from Rachel Woods, an assistant secretary with responsibility for the criminal legislation function of the Department of Justice, and Sinead Gibney, chief commissioner with the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. As the law currently stands, it's an offence for a person to aid, abet, counsel or procure the suicide or an attempt at suicide of another person. And that currently at the moment, if you were involved in that, you could face a penalty of up to 14 years imprisonment if you were convicted. Deputy Michael Healy-Ray joins us on the programme now to discuss this. Good morning, Deputy.
Good morning, Greg, to you and your listeners.
I suppose, Michael, from the get-go, where do you stand on the introduction of assisted dying legislation?
Well, I suppose the first question to ask me is the committee itself, what are we charged with doing? We've been asked by both houses of the Oireachtas, both the Seanad and the Dáil, to look at this whole issue to see if there is a need or a requirement or a necessity to change the existing legislation. So the committee have been meeting for several weeks now to put together a programme of work that we are to undertake for the next 9 months, because 9 months is the duration time in which we are to come up with a report to lay before the House of the Oireachtas at that time, having listened to the views and the evidence of many expert witnesses from all different sectors of society. And it is indeed a very important and sensitive matter, because of the fact that dying is something that we all have to do. It is something that we all have encountered already in our lives with family and friends and relatives. And some people sadly have what I would call a hard time with illness and with different issues at the time of their death. And I suppose the whole need to look at this has arisen from people's life's experiences and the fact that many people from the political world, from the medical world, have been saying that we should do this. But what would be wrong would be for any of us to preempt, Greg, or to say what the outcome would be or what we think,
But it is still a good time, and I don't think it compromises anything to ask who is pushing this. I mean, this is not, people aren't taking to the streets. I mean, you know the battles that we have to fight in this country for rights or for fairness. You know, I don't see a massive push from general society for this. I mean, who is pushing this? And even down to who decided that we would call it assisted dying. You know, the tone seems to be being set here. Who decided it would be assisted dying and not really what it is, assisted suicide? Because language is incredibly important, Michael. I mean, are you happy with the way it's being phrased to make it more, I don't know, you know, more gentle a conversation?
Well, you're so correct in the way you actually put that, because now I want to come back to answering a question that you asked me a moment ago. You said, where do I stand in this whole issue? And I have to be frank and tell you, and it's no secret, I am what I would call of a conservative nature. I will give you an example in that during the whole abortion referendum and during that whole debate, being very frank with you, I was against the introduction of abortion. I really believed, and still do, and I will do until I die myself, I believe that from the moment of conception till the moment of death, that a child should be protected and nurtured in every way. And that was just my opinion. I don't mean to insult or offend anybody else. Democracy, I'm a Democrat, and more people than me had a different opinion at that time, and they won out, and I didn't support that. But again, I respect that that is where we are today. But I couldn't go tell you that I'm happy about it. I've been charged with chairing this committee. My aim is to do so in a 100% absolutely democratic and fair fashion, and ensure that politicians on both sides of the debate, people who might be conservative like myself, are people who would have a different viewpoint, that they will have an opportunity to work at this. And at the end of the day, we will have to see what will be the outcome of the work of the committee. And then that will go before the Houses of Directors. And ultimately, it will be a decision taken by all of those people whether or not the legislation as it exists is changed.
Okay, because but can we... at this point, Deputy Healy Ray, and I'm neither a liberal nor a conservative, by the way, but I can only approach each issue as it comes on the table here, so to speak. But how can the Irish public in any way trust this process or trust a referendum when in a couple of short years after, whatever they think, right, okay, well, in certain circumstances, because we've heard the really strong arguments, yes, okay, maybe assisted suicide is okay, but I don't want it for this, but I'm okay having it for that. And then 2 or 3 years later, it's reviewed, and it potentially, though it wouldn't, could become a free-for-all. Do you know what I mean? How can the Irish public trust the democratic process? Because you vote on something, and you believe you've voted a certain way, and then a couple of short years later, it can all be changed. For right or wrong, by the way, but it can be changed.
Well, Keith, I really appreciate the way you're putting that, because that is exactly what has happened as such with the whole abortion issue. And I hate going from one to the other, but because of the way you posed that question, you actually have that happening at the moment, in that many people that did support abortion, for example, they're not happy now when they hear people coming out, politicians, for example, and saying that they wanted made more easily accessible, and they want to make changes now already. And you've heard that going on in the Dáil. You've heard politicians coming along and saying, well, we want to make amendments to what the people already did. So you are so correct in what you've just said, because it has happened in the abortion issue. But I mean, I'm not able to tell you that this is what's going to happen out of the work of our committee, because the first thing you have to do is let our committee do its work and see what the outcome of that will be.
I just think it would be interesting to poll the public before this conversation starts, because we are in a process here. And as I say, I am not talking to the subject itself or its potential outcomes, okay? I'm just talking to how things are done in this country. And I want people to be really clear here, because I, with all honesty, hand on my heart, have not considered this. So I don't have a view one way or other. But I can see what's happening here is the committee starts and we've got this language that's being used, assisted dying rather than suicide. So a picture is being, if you search assisted suicide and go to news stories over the last 6, 7, 8 weeks, there's an awful lot of stories about the amount of people that travel to Switzerland, for an example, to avail of these services. So then what happens, the conversation starts that why should people have to travel for this service? They should be able to get it at home. And it's a pattern, right? And I would like if the public had some sort of an input at the beginning of the process to see if we should actually trigger that process. Does that make sense?
It does. But you know one thing that you could actually do? You run a very excellent radio show. Couldn't you do a poll there yourself, and you wouldn't be long getting an answer as to a representative view of the country? What do people think? In other words, the facts of the matter are, at present, to simplify it, if you assist somebody in their death at this time, you will receive 14 years in jail.
Yeah, but it's illegal.
So.
I mean, so it's illegal. Exactly. So, I mean, you assist to kill someone that you're murder. You're complicit in. It's almost like it's a murder or a manslaughter. I mean, it is illegal. So that's just the fact.
So the work of this committee is to see and to understand in very certain and very specific and very specific circumstances, should there be allowances made in where it would be the proper or right thing to assist in a person's death.
Yes.
So if you were to ask that question, I wonder what answer would you get?
Well, you see, I mean, the only problem with that is that they end up being skewed because people most passionate are most likely to take part. But anyway, like, when you're discussing it, Michael, right, I imagine the conversations will be, and it's about someone who has a life-limiting illness, and it's a very tragic story, and should that person have to go through that? And I understand that, but I want yous to consider, for an example, in a country that is already demonising and making older people, for an example, feel like a burden, the problem, the pensions, the hospitals. You know what I mean? An older person in this country, we all had to shut down to save your life during COVID. Older people in this country are incredibly poorly treated and disrespected. And this type of legislation, whilst it might help some, you need to discuss what kind of pressure it might put on older people to feel that this is about them again, or that this they could be pressured or made to feel that this is a route that they should go down. Currently at the moment, we thankfully have 75-year-old, 80-year-olds that are going for treatment for cancer. You know, are they all of a sudden going to feel pressured into having to go down a different route, for an example? And it's those people like that I hope that this committee considers, because every action has a reaction, and we have to make sure that we don't, you know, we have the right conversation. Does that make sense to you? Do you think that's the way this will be?
Well, it does, but I suppose the one thing that nobody would want from any side of this argument, nobody would want for older people to feel as though this was putting any pressure on them or any disrespect to them that we're even having this conversation. And at the end of the day, what we have to do now is allow the committee to do their work. There's 9 months to do so. Listen to the experts that will come before the committee and hopefully make an informed and proper and intelligent decision and outcome as to whether or not, because remember, there is no onus on the committee that there has to be a change in the existing legislation. The committee could deliberate and could say that no change is wanted, required, needed or welcome, or I could do the opposite.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. That's Deputy Michael Healy-Ray. And as I say, and just to be really clear, I don't know on what side I would come down on that. I simply haven't thought about it strongly enough or formed an opinion. But we just have to make sure that we get a process or go through a process, that the conversation is had in a perfectly balanced way, and that all views are considered and all the ramifications of decisions like this are considered. But as Deputy Healy-Ray said, you know, this is a democracy and this programme is your show. What do you think? Let's have the conversation here. For and against, by the way, because I really don't want anyone to think that I'm coming down one way or other here. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000, and we can have that conversation. As I say, I just, because I work in media, because I'm quite not so cynical of it, I can see how it's being framed at the moment. And I just want to step outside of that box and have the actual fair conversation where it's people's views and not necessarily even emotional arguments one way or other. Okay, anyway, back with more after these. Nolene Blackwell is CEO of Dublin Rape Crisis Centre and joins us on the programme now. Nolene, nice to have you on the show. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Greg.
Right. Now, Ireland's first ever anonymous platform for survivors of rape and sexual assault is being launched today. And one of the statistics, and it's such a an area you don't like to use the word statistics, but it is what it is. 53% of women and 34% of men who've experienced sexual violence told someone. So that means a huge proportion of men and just under half of women haven't. That's a concern that people are having to live with that on their own, isn't it? I mean, there's lots of reasons why people won't want to talk about it, but I think this platform will facilitate those who do want to talk about it.
Yeah, so that's the aim of it. It is, on the one hand, to give people an online space where they can anonymously tell their story, their experience, and put it up for the community, for the general community, and for themselves. And that's a real value in it, because it is really hard sometimes to talk about this at all for anybody. And in particular, if you've been holding on to it for a while, you may not have a way out. So that's why we thought this is really useful. And the other thing that we keep hearing from people is that they feel so alone when they have experienced sexual violence. And this will show them that there are other people in the community, that other people have maybe experienced something like this, or at least that they're not on their own, and that they will join that community. So we're calling it We Speak. It's not just I Speak. We speak out about a really pervasive issue in our society that people very often don't feel comfortable speaking about.
Will there be an element of this in that for some, as I say, not for all, that maybe too going through the process of writing down and submitting their experience, will it be cathartic for them?
Yeah, that's certainly, we even find that already, that often when people will even use the National 24-Hour Helpline or talk to somebody about it, the very naming of it, it helps to kind of minimise or maybe reduce the problem a little bit, because at least it's now named, it's spoken about. And this is what we hope that it will do as well. This platform isn't a way of fully disclosing an experience, because it will be anonymous. And when the information comes in, it will be monitored by us. And we, before going up, everything will be taken out that might disclose who a person is or who anybody else was that was involved in the incident as well. But hopefully it will be that business of saying, I can speak about it. It is not all, it's not the whole of me. And that's certainly what we're hoping to do.
And of course, everyone is an individual and some may never choose to speak, but also at the same time, they might feel very alone, that their experience is, they're very isolated in their experience, and being able to read, presumably, I think, other people's experience, it might help them, even if they choose never to speak.
Yeah. And the other thing we will have in this space is we will have an opportunity for people who write their story to put something in that's hopeful, to put something in about how they are healing, if that is the case. And that can be very useful for other people as well, because when you're miserable, it is hard sometimes to remember that things can get better. And hopefully this will also give a bit of hope and a bit of healing to people. And people, when they put up their story, they will be able to come back and modify it in time to come. So if they're in one particular stage and they want to update it at a later stage, they'll be able to do that, subject to the moderation that we do as well. So really, in some ways, often people feel now the only way they can do this is by going to a therapist in private, or by going on social media, which is not safe, which is not confined. Hopefully this will be a safe space as well, where people can tell it, where they will be treated respectfully, and where they will be asked to respect other people as well.
But the reasons we find ourselves in this position is that, you know, and there are stories that have been recounted here whereby one person confided in another, and then that person told their mother, and then it all turned into such a situation that they actually retracted the story in the first place. Or if you post something on social media, even if you don't name the people responsible, there is going to be a large proportion of people that will jump on that, victim blame or send DMs of a sexual nature or whatever it is. So we're actually having to do this because of the way society is that people don't feel comfortable talking about it because they don't know how others react. Maybe that's a lack of understanding or what have you. Or because there are so many nasty people on social media, they'll just get a further abuse there. Are we ever going to change that? Is public attitude ever going to change that we don't need these sort of anonymous spaces to try and help people who are the victims of awful crime?
Well, I think the very fact that you and I are able to talk about this now, maybe in a way that we couldn't have spoken about it 5 or 10 years ago, shows that there is more of an understanding of the awful impact of sexual violence on people. And hopefully things are changing. This is just another way of broadening out the conversation. It's not for everybody, but it is a place where we're not going to tolerate abusive comments on it. People will be able to support. You'd be able to sort of make a little mark to say, I support somebody or I like this, but you won't be able to abuse them. You won't be able to question their motives. People have all their own motives. And this is a chance for them to tell it plainly, if in a redacted way, to ensure that it is totally anonymous.
And is this live now, Nolene, or how do people submit their experiences?
It's live right now. I mean, it's the first day of it, Greg. So we only have a couple of stories up there that, in fact, we got from people in advance who are happy to put them up. But it's live. It's WeSpeak.ie. It's part of our We Consent campaign. But WeSpeak.ie will get you straight into it. There may be stories going up there already. It may actually be something that people will have to think about, because it may be that they have they want to write it in a different way now. There might be people who even want to do a painting or a poem or something like that. All of those things can go up. And it's for all types of harassment, sexual harassment. So it may be slow to start off. But we also think by the end of today, some people will say, I have wanted this, I need it. And they will be putting up their account of what happened to them.
And I mean, and I hate to say this out loud, but such is society. You know, there are going to be people that will repurpose these stories elsewhere for different reasons. And it's horrendous that that's the way life is. But unfortunately, it is.
Of course, the thing is, we're not hearing them at all now. Mm. So, you know, that will undoubtedly happen. And we're aware that's a risk. But at the same time, people aren't hearing the stories at all now. Yeah. So this is a chance to get that voice out that is currently suppressed and not heard.
Okay. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Nolene Blackwell, who is CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Is that something you agree with? 086 60 25,000. Now, an email in from a listener that reads as follows. I'm a single woman, and don't get me wrong, I love my own company, but I was left fuming when I received a wedding invitation with just my name on it and no plus one for my friend's daughter's wedding. When I approached the mother of the bride, she stated that I was sociable and sure I could chat away to anyone. So she didn't think it was an issue. Yes, I know a good few there, but I don't chat to them every day. The point is, I'm still by myself for the day. I just felt it was wrong of the bride and groom to assume I'd be grand just to save on numbers. If my other friends can bring their partners, what's the difference in me bringing a friend? Am I being difficult here? Do you empathise with this listener? I think they shouldn't be pigeonholed as single, should they? Or, I don't know, weddings are expensive. So what do you think? She is a happily single person, received an invitation, but there's no plus one. So the bride and groom presume that she'll chat to anyone there, she'll make her own company. So she's turning up on her own and others will be able to bring partners. What do you think? Would you go? Would you accept that invitation? Would you be happy enough? Has this happened to you? Did it upset you? Did you not care? 086 60 25,000. We put it up on social media to gauge some reaction there. Maggie says, I wouldn't go on my own. Definitely should have a plus one on the invitation. Actually, I wouldn't go on my own either, by the way. Denise says, sorry, weddings are private functions, and as the couple are paying the venue for meals, wines, etc., they have the right to decide who joins them. No one else gets to dictate who they invite. Anything else is entitlement. That being said, you don't know the relationship status of everyone. They don't know all of the partners, I presume. Mary says, the plus one can add up pretty quickly. When I got married, we didn't invite plus ones, and not just friends either. That included for our own siblings who didn't have partners at that time. It's the bride and groom groom's decision who they have at the wedding. You don't have to go to the wedding if you're not comfortable going by yourself. Just decline the invitation. John says if they know you well enough to invite you to this wedding, they obviously know you're single. Why would you expect a plus one invite then? And finally, just for now, Lorna says, I think a plus one would have been nice for the lady asked, and she may have decided to go herself anyway, but she would have had the choice. I'm sure she'll be able to fall in with the rest, but it's the initial walking into the ceremony, etc., on your own and not knowing who'll be sit beside or who you'll be sit beside. I do think she should go and make the most of celebrating the wedding of her friend's daughters. What would you do? 086 60 25000. Now, we are accepting your entries for our fantastic quiz. We have a €100 one for all voucher to give away. If you want to get involved, you have to come on air and answer a question. The questions have been simplified. The process has been simplified. I understand it fully now. It's amazing. Someone said to me yesterday, Greg, you should just not do quizzes on your show. But you know what? Yesterday was good fun. We got there in the end-ish. Today, it's going to work a treat. I know exactly what we're doing. 086 60 25000. WhatsApp your name, where you're from, and the number you want us to get back to you on, to that number. If you want to come on air and be within a chance to win, and a very good chance, it's a 1 in 2 chance, really. It's going to be about speed today. I think the listeners will know the answer to the question, so today's going to be about speed. 086 60 25000. I'm panicking just even mentioning the mechanic now. I'm up to high dough after yesterday. 086 60 25000, your name, where you're from, and your number. If it's the same number that you text us on that you call us back, that's fine too. Right, okay, that's coming up. It's all very exciting, I assure you. After 10 o'clock, you will have Community Guard information where you hear the latest appeals and information live here on the show before they appear anywhere else. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And a reminder that you can watch that too on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, or our Facebook pages. All right, we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this break.